What pause in all this?
Woo! Put Scooter on the phone, you bird brain.
What do you do, backflips? You jump up there in a silly suit? What do you do?
You go bam! I want you to play that.
Hey, good evening, everybody. What's happening? Fast Freddy back at the state-of-the-art Youngstown Studios here in downtown Youngstown for another Fast Freddy Rocks Youngstown podcast. With me, my producer and co-host, Joe Danier. Joe, good to see you, man.
Yeah, likewise, man. How you been?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Good. Busy. You know, this weekend at the radio station on Y103, we have a big block party weekend coming up. And we'll be giving away tickets for George Thorogood and Sammy Hagar at Blossom. That's going to be their first big party of summer. That's going to be on the 16th of July. So, you know, Sammy's got that one song out, one bourbon, one scotch, or George Thorogood's got one bourbon. We got the bourbon here. Now we need the scotch and the beer. I know we got a beer here somewhere.
I don't think we got scotch. We're not that
fancy. Yeah, We're getting there. Hey, you got the Buffalo Trace.
There you go.
And I'll tell you, a lot of people that have been following the podcast, they're really impressed with the Buffalo Trace. This is some good stuff here. So anyways, you know, Sammy Hagar's got Mas Tequila and one of his songs. And, you know, he's known for his Cabo Wabo tequila. I think he sold it. He's got some other kind of libations now. You know, he's got some other kind of spirits that he's dealing with. I think he's got some rum out now and some other things.
That never always works out, though. These celebrities, they latch onto some kind of liquor and it always like...
Sammy actually went pretty good.
Sammy went good?
Yeah, Sammy is still going strong. And Sammy had a club in Cabo. I think he still does. And one of the coolest concert events that you ever want to be at is Sammy's birthday bash in Cabo. And I've never been there. I know people that have been there. They love it. You have to like camp out for a couple of days to get in and all this stuff. But it's the club. And then, you know, Sammy's there. And then he always has other people, you know, Ted Nugent and Toby Keith. And he just has a whole array of his friends that come down there. And Sammy claims to be the only guy to ever get Ted Nugent drunk. You know, Ted Nugent, I guess, was never a drinker. Womanizer, yes, but he was never a big boozer or a drug user. And so I guess the one day Sammy made up some kind of concoction down there at Cabo. And I guess Ted started nipping into that and it got it. But I was thinking, can you imagine Ted Nugent drunk? The way this guy rants and raves being straight sober, I'm sitting here going, man, if Ted is liquored up, I don't know if I would even want to be around the guy.
Super quiet, goes in the corner and cries, you know?
Yeah. Like, whoa, what the hell hit me, man? But no, I can't see Ted ever being at a loss for words. And I'm sure add alcohol to Ted and that would really be something. Yeah. But I think he called this drink that Sammy whipped up like devil's piss or something. And in addition to us giving away tickets, some winner is going to get an autographed cocktail recipe book from Sammy, which is pretty cool. 80 of his favorite drinks.
Beautiful.
Maybe we should see how many we could get through. We'll start mixing them.
In one night? Yeah. Oh, that's dangerous.
We'll have to bring some people down for that. Hey, Keith Sturgeon is checking in today. You know, Keith's our artist and motorcycle painter and everything. And he recently did an awesome artwork, awesome picture of Evel Knievel. And Evel's family just loved it. And they sent him a nice letter and everything to compliment him. So he's got some good work going.
So talented.
Oh, man. My buddy Paul Maverick is Greek said they threw him out of Cabo Wabo one time. I'm not surprised. You know why? Because somebody from the South Side comes down there. And I'm sure he was trying to sneak a flask in or something. I just know. And they go, South Side, Youngstown. It's like, yeah, okay. You're out of here. We heard about you. We know all about you, Greek. You're out of here, man. But I would like to see Sammy's birthday party at Cabo one of these times. I think that would be really
great.
We'll
have to take Amtrak down to Cabo.
I don't know if it goes there. I think once you get to the border, you're on your own. You got to hop a freight and go over, you know. And they probably don't watch you because they're just probably watching for people going the opposite direction, you know, so you can sneak in while they're looking the other way. But that's what we're doing this weekend. We got the big block party weekend. We're going to do a little thing with Billy Idol, put together a little, you know, holiday weekend show with some of his favorite songs and some of his memories. And, you know, the thing is with Memorial Day weekend, you have to be respectful for what the holiday is about. And then on the other end, though, you know, I mean, we do want to have some fun and stuff like that. So I think that's one thing that a lot of people sometimes maybe they just don't realize. They'll come up and say, hey, happy Memorial Day, when it's not like you're celebrating Memorial Day, you're observing Memorial Day is how we look at it. And that's how we're playing it. You know, we'll have the respect for the heroes and the fallen heroes. And of course, people are going to be out there having fun as well and kicking off summer. So, you know, we're going to keep the two where they belong and, you know,
celebrating give them, for yep, the sacrifice, yep, right?
There you go. So, that's what we got going on this weekend. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We got the Sammy and George Thorogood, you know, I mean, what could you say about him? Bad to the bone and I drink alone and move it on over, one bourbon, one scotch and one beer. And that's going to be a heck of a concert. Yes, and we're going to have a heck of a weekend too. So we're going to have a lot of fun. Hopefully I'm going to get some fishing in. And I'm also going to get a little bit of maybe some motorcycle riding in, depending on the weather.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm most impressed about is everybody's back to work now. All the entertainers are on stages. Yes. All the venues are filled. It's amazing.
You know, and I think this summer is, you know, as long as the weather cooperates, I think this is going to be a big bust out summer, especially for concerts. If you don't realize how people are ready to get out and go see some live music, you know, all the concert tickets that we've been giving away, the response has been through the roof because people want to get out. They want to see live music again. A lot of people have not been to a concert in years. In maybe 2-3 years now. And that's why coming up this Sunday, one of the things we're going to talk about is we're going to share my interview with Tommy Dobeck, the drummer from the Michael Stanley Band. And they're having a Michael Stanley tribute at the Robbins Theater in downtown Warren on Sunday night.
That place impresses me, man. They're doing so much good shit.
You know, and I think this is going to be great. We're going to celebrate 5 decades of Michael's music. His band for like the last 30 years, the Resonators are going to be there. One of his early collaborators, Jonah Coslin, is going to be there. You know, Jonah did a lot of the mellow stuff, Ladies' Choice. What's the other good one? Ladies' Choice and... Waste a Little Time on Me. Those were 2 dynamite songs. And on top of that, the Vindies are going to be opening, and Jackie from the Vindies is going to do a couple of songs. And I'll tell you what, that band right now is really amazing. They're this close to hitting the big time. And everybody loves the Vindies. You know, we talked to Donnie Iris a couple weeks ago, and, you know, Donnie's a big fan. And I know all the guys, you know, and the Resonators are a big fan. And I think this band is this close. And I really felt bad for them because they were one of the, they were on the verge of really hitting it. You know, they had the momentum going full speed, then COVID shut them down, and I think that knocked their whole game plan back 2 years. It really did.
But man, they sprung right back in there. They're
oh yeah,
so well.
Yeah, they did. They really did.
They're talented.
Yeah, I mean, they are so good. And so we got that coming up this weekend on Sunday. And
we gotta get them down here.
Yeah. Oh no, they're coming. Are as they? Soon as I yeah as soon as I work it out. No, nice. I talked to them not too long ago, and they said yeah, we'll come down. We'll be on. And so I want to hurry up and get them on before they hit the big time. Right? And then I'll
and
miss
like,
my
oh,
chance.
We have time, man. Yeah.
You know, and so we're keeping an eye out. We're keeping an eye out for them. We're going to get them on next week. My friend Cindy Farina will be here, and Cindy sings with the band Sin City and the Saints, and she's been around forever. And she goes back to the days she had their band Bootleg back in the day was just, such a kick-ass band. And then her brother, Carl Farina, who played with like Bill Scudder and just about every other band, you know, he's one of the old school cats. He's suffering, you know, he's battling cancer right now. And they have a benefit for him coming up on June 5th at Westside Bowl. So she's going to be down here to talk a little bit about the benefit, who's going to be there. And also we're going to share some stories too, because we got some good ones, you know. So Cindy and myself will share some stories, and I don't know, maybe she'll bring somebody along, and you know, and that'd be nice. And we just want to send our best wishes going out to Carl, that he gets well soon, you know. And also, if I could work this out, you know, we probably want to do something June 12th, I believe it is, in Painesville. They're doing a big four tribute band benefit for John Safara, the former drummer of Glass Harp. And John has been waiting for a liver transplant. He's been having a hell of a time getting his liver transplant. And they're going to do a benefit for him up in Painesville. So we'll give you all the information on that too. So if I could, you know, if I could do what I can to help him out and at least help spread the word a little bit, that would be cool. So what do you think, man? We ready to jump in the interview with Tommy? Sure. And then we'll come back that. And before we, you know what, we got the cup of espresso. You gave me a bigger cup here, huh?
Yeah, right. I want to make sure you had a good some mixing.
Oh,
space.
Yeah. Now I forget what Jay Bird's son said I'm supposed to miss.
All right, somebody in chat over here, tell us what the ratio was from the other show of how much espresso to bourbon. I think it's 1-for-1.
I think it was 1-for-1. Yeah. That's a big one. That's what she said. But Tommy Dobeck from the Michael Stanley Band, two memorable stories with me and him. The one, it was me, Tommy Dobeck, and Bob Palander, the keyboard player for Michael Stanley. And we were at, remember when they used to do those audio shows at you know, the, like the Custom Sound Spectacular or something, Audio Warehouse or whatever they were at the time, Custom Sounds. And they had this big, you know, had all the dealers and all this like cut rate stuff and low prices. And they'd have it at Packard Music Hall, and they just have the place jammed. So we're there, and they had like a couple of Playboy bikini girls there, and we're broadcasting, and these guys are hanging out and everything, come meet the guys from Michael Stanley Band. Well, the thing is going on. An urgent news bulletin comes over the radio and said, Custom Sounds has filed for bankruptcy protection. No. Well, we're at the place, you know, everybody's scrambling going, uh-oh, can we get paid now? Cash, maybe, would that be nice if we could get this squared away? I'll never forget that one. And then the other time, this was not really too long ago. Me and my buddy Diener were at the show at one of the rib burn-offs, you know, one of the last rib burn-offs. And, you know, Michael was there, and you know, I think that night he played like 3.5 hours. It was probably one of the best shows I've ever seen. And I think what made it even better, we were sitting right behind Tommy on stage, and we had a bottle of Jaeger, and we drank the whole bottle during the show. And the Diener got the bottle autographed, and that was really, he still has a picture and the bottle of Michael. But we were sitting there during the show, and like, you know, we're getting liquored up, and we're just sitting there chatting with Tommy and stuff. And it was really a good time. So we'll talk a little bit about his memories, and I'll add a couple more memories on to that. And, you know, maybe somebody else would like to share their memories. You know, I was thinking, you know, I've been writing these promos and stuff like, you know, for the radio station, like, if your dad walks with a limp because he fell off the fire escape trying to sneak into the Tomorrow Club to see Left End, you're listening to the right radio station, you know, and I got some other ones along those lines, you know, like, and I just thought of one the other day. If you met your first wife at a Michael Stanley concert at the Tomorrow Club, if you met your second wife, tribute to the Tomorrow Club. You know, I think we got to add Michael Stanley to the list.
Yes, with Left End, sure.
Too. Yeah, Michael Stanley is now officially on the list. Yeah, we don't have a show unless we mention Michael Stanley.
That's right.
And if you met your first ex-wife at a Michael Stanley show at the Tomorrow Club in Youngstown, if you met your second ex-wife at the Michael Stanley show at the Richfield Coliseum. And if you met your third ex-wife at the Michael Stanley Show at Blossom, you know, you're in the right place. So without further ado, let's run through our little conversation here with Tommy Dobeck to get you ready for the Michael Stanley tribute coming up this Sunday at the Robbins Theater in downtown Warren.
Heavier, a little bit more rocking, so they needed a drummer. So I was playing with a group called Circus in Cleveland, and they came to the Agora.
Okay, we had a little technical difficulty here, so we're going to start this
that
all
was sort of my audition night.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, our conversation with drummer extraordinaire Tommy Dobeck.
This Sunday at the Robbins Theater in downtown Warren, it is our tribute to Michael Stanley.
We're in downtown Warren. Ta-da. It's live. That's what happened.
This Sunday at the Robbins Theater in downtown Warren, it is our tribute to Michael Stanley. We're going to celebrate 5 decades of Michael's music, and the Resonators are going to be there. We've got special guests Michael Weber and Jonah Coslin. The Vindies are going to be doing some music, and they are great if you haven't seen them. And with me right now is Michael's longtime drummer, Tommy Dobeck. Tommy, how you doing, man?
Great, great. Great to hear you, Freddie.
Oh, it's good to talk to you again. Like we were talking a little earlier off the air, you know, I've been a fan of Michael Stanley and the Michael Stanley Band since like day one. I've seen you guys in every configuration, in any kind of hall that you could possibly play. And I got to say, every time it was always a great time, number one. And my first question would be, what was it about Michael personally and the Michael Stanley Band collectively that made you guys so endeared in Northeast Ohio? Why does everybody love you guys?
Well, I mean, first thing with Michael's music and his lyrics, people could identify in the Midwest. It was like a backdrop to their lives. It was great. And we just, it was a family that we did for our entire career. We were so entwined with each other's lives for so long, and definitely enjoyed it all those years, and enjoyed all those people who used to come to the shows, and especially in Youngstown, we had a special connection with Youngstown. It was always wonderful.
Oh, yeah. You know, with Youngstown, of course, everybody knows that Michael came up with the line, "Thank God for the man who put the white lines on the highway," after a gig down at the Tomorrow Club or the Agora, whatever it was called at that time, on the Turnpike. Right. And, you know, of course, Danny Pecchio and Michael Gismondi and Gary Markowski and your road crew. We all have all these ties to the Youngstown area. And yeah, on top of that, I don't think a lot of people realize that Michael's mom was from East Palestine right down the road. So it's almost like you guys, Michael Stanley Band, are like Youngstown's house band, really.
Well, you know, we used to rehearse in Youngstown as well, down on Market Street. Jam Sound was a PA company we used to have, and we also rehearsed there in Youngstown. We went down there all the time.
Yeah, now Jam Sound, they've also did tours for the Ramones and a bunch of other people, too. So they're a big company. A lot of people don't realize all the rock and roll connections to Youngstown. Now, how did you get involved with the Michael Stanley Band? How did you hook up with Michael?
Well, Michael was out looking for a drummer. They were doing a trio and decided they needed to get a little bit heavier, a little bit more rocking. So they needed a drummer. So I was playing with a group called Circus in Cleveland, and they came to the Agora. Somebody told them to come see me, and that was sort of my audition night. I didn't know that was really what they were there for. I wondered if they came up and sat in on Mustang Sal we did, and they kept walking around my drums while I was playing, and I thought it was a little odd, but so that was how Michael found me, and been there ever since.
Oh, that's really cool. Now, when you think of the fraternity of all the great musicians in Cleveland, now, did you cross paths with all these guys? Well, of course, I would say, you know, Joe Walsh, Benjamin Orr, all these guys. Did you know all these cats when you were out there?
Most of them, you know, we got to tour with Joe a lot. We were on the road with Barnstorm, and it was always fun. We did a couple of things with just Joe. We backed him up. That was a real treat. He's an incredible musician. And most of the guys, yeah, we met. We had Ben Orr came in to sing on a song we did. And most of them I had the pleasure of meeting, yeah.
Yeah, Eric Carmen and all those guys, you probably...
Oh, yeah, Eric. It's funny, Jim Bonafani, the drummer for the Raspberries, and I are become quite close friends. He's He comes over all the time.
Oh, now that is really cool. You know, some people just don't realize, maybe they do. Maybe some of the younger people don't, but the rock history in Cleveland is just amazing. And to be a part of that, that's got to be really cool for you.
Oh, yeah. It's great to talk to all the guys. We try to get together as much as can.
Now, over the years, you've had a chance, you know, you talk about working with Joe Walsh and all these guys. Now, when you guys recorded Cabin Fever, you had a chance to work with Mutt Lang, who's, you know, responsible for so many mega hit records like, you know, Def Leppard Hysteria, and then, you know, even getting in the country with Shania Twain and stuff like that. Now, what was it like working on putting together an album with Mutt Lang?
Oh, Mutt was incredible. He was just musician's musician. I mean, he was and a great producer. And most of the time I remember was Mutt yelling at me to hit harder. He had to think he's got his drum sound, but you had to beat the hell out of the drum set. Funny guy. It was funny. His nickname is Mutt, and he had a dog named Bob. So, I mean, it was a funny guy.
Now, did you guys record that like in a castle or something? Or was it, you know, where did you record that?
We were down in Wales on a little farm in Wales. We recorded it and we mixed it in Essex Studio outside of London. And we were over there for almost 3 months. And it was, we needed to get back to some American food for one thing.
Right. Yeah, that had to be cool.
He was great.
So Mutt wanted you to hit those drums even harder on some of those mellow songs and stuff that you find on.
Oh, God, yeah. Damn. Why Should Love Be This Way? I went through about 3 snare drum hits. It was
amazing.
It's a ballad, Mutt. It's a ballad.
Amazing, amazing. And that's when Gary Markowski came up with the character, the ant, which is on the back of that album cover.
Yes, the ant stayed with us for, oh, God. I mean, we toured, and he used to come out on stage like the last, or during the encores, dressed like the ant. Got quite a few looks.
And if people aren't familiar with that, you could look up the back cover of the, I'm having a brain fart.
Cabin Fever.
Cabin Fever. We've only been talking about it for the last 10 minutes. But, yeah, you know, he's got, like, these goggles on with one lens and a crazy kind of a cap and a diaper and a scarf. And it's just crazy. So how did that come about? He was just sitting around and, you know, you guys were getting goofy or what?
Well, he arranged the ant. The ant was before MSB. I mean, he was doing that, I think, in Coconut in Youngstown before he started playing with us. He just showed up one day and he dressed like that. And we all kind of looked and we were kind of in shock. Couldn't sure where he was going with it.
And how did you guys pose for that picture at the on the back of that cover, too? Because that's a classic photo. Just all the stuff that's going on in that picture.
Well, that was in Mike Delkin's living room, our old manager's living room. And we had that great couch he had there. And then all of a sudden, Gary decided to dress up like the ant. And he jumped up on that couch and we were running away.
Oh, that's an awesome picture and awesome times. Now we got, you know, things are rolling pretty good with that album. Then, you know, Heartland comes out and it's like everything just takes you guys to the next level.
Yeah, things were going well at that point. Mutt did a great job with us, and we ended up with great producer after great producer. We were real fortunate with the people we were able to work with.
And then on Heartland, you guys got a chance to work with the big man, Clarence Clemons from the E Street Band. What was it like working with the big man? How was he? What was he like?
Probably the nicest musician you would imagine. You know, he came in. And we were recording his parts in Cleveland, and he was, I forget the name of the studio, but he was in there and he set up these metal music stands around his microphone, and he liked the way it made his horn sound. And he was a huge guy. I mean, I got a picture with him at the end of the day, and he put his arm around me, and my head's literally like in his armpit. It was funny as hell. I asked him what he wanted to drink, and he said, "I'll have some vodka." And I asked, "What would you like with that?" And he said, "Vodka." So we just got him a bottle of vodka.
Oh, yeah, that had to be something. And then I recall that when Bruce went on tour that year, that they were playing the Heartland album, like when people were coming into the arena and stuff. So that's had to be pretty cool too.
Yeah, Bruce was great as far as promoting, you know, friends of his band and stuff. It was real nice. Michael got to meet him when they played at the Coliseum, a one-on-one in his dressing room, which Michael loved. That was just fabulous for him.
Yeah, you could definitely see the Bruce Springsteen influences in Michael's lyrics, a little bit of Dylan in there, a little bit of Stones. You could get it all in there.
Sure. I think one of his favorite compliments, that people called him the thinking man's Bob Seger. And he liked that.
Yeah, that's a real good one. The thinking man's Bob Seger. I'm gonna have to remember that. So now you got Heartland going and you're getting involved in MTV. Now you guys were on the cutting edge of MTV. You had some of the first videos on MTV. What was it like delving into that new frontier, and you know, what was the mindset and everything getting into the whole video world?
Well, it was kind of scary. I mean, no one, you know, we weren't actors and didn't really want us to act. We were trying to figure it out. And the first video we did at like 3 a.m. in a shopping cart factory in Los Angeles. And, you know, we actually made some shopping carts that night. MTV used me in one of their commercials. It was me with a forklift. I was raising a forklift and they said, get a rise from Michael Stanley on MTV. It was pretty funny.
It's amazing what MTV did for so many artists at that time. You know, I think of ZZ Top and just about anybody that really had some decent videos on there. It was amazing on what it did for people's careers.
And there was a whole group of video producers. I mean, there was like, we had a list of people that did nothing but videos. It was a whole new market out there for them.
Now, when you guys set the record at Blossom Music Center, 4 days, 4 sellouts, which hasn't been duplicated since and probably never will be, what was that whole thing like? What was the feeling when you realized you guys were selling that many tickets? What was it like walking out on stage to see all those faces and people going nuts? What was that whole stretch like?
Oh, it was great. For me, it was frightening. You know, that was a lot of people every night. And it was just great to see, you know, hometown, that many people all the time. And most of the time, I think it rained when we played Blossom, and it was fun watching the kids slide down the hill in the mud. It was
right.
The tree.
Right.
But I couldn't get a better feeling. It was great. I started bringing binoculars to look out in the crowd, see if they could see anybody I knew.
Well, I'm sure you had a lot of people asking you for tickets, I bet.
Oh, those were the days of tickets. Yes. Everybody's all of a sudden became more popular with the relatives.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. Yeah, that had to be just a great time. And then, of course, you guys set the record for what, the quickest sellout at Richfield Coliseum, like beating out like Zeppelin and stuff.
Yeah, it was fast. I think we did 2 or 3 nights sold out at the old Coliseum. It was sad to see it go. That was a beautiful old hall.
I think everybody loves the Richfield Coliseum. To this day, you know, people our age have so many great memories from that place. And it just seemed like, you know, the way it was just set up, it was just so perfect for concerts. It was just an awesome time there.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw one of my first. I went to see Cat Stevens there. I don't know how young I was, but it was like, wow, look at this place.
Yeah.
It was very cool.
Yeah. Now, when you talk about first concerts, I don't know how many people in Youngstown would say their first concert was some kind of a Michael Stanley show. And I'm just thinking about a couple that come to mind, of course, the Agora, the Tomorrow Club, whatever, you know, it was called at the time. You guys played Struthers Fieldhouse. I remember that show was really packed.
Yeah.
And you played Struthers Fieldhouse, and then you played YSU, and Gary fell off the stage and broke his ribs in that show.
I do remember that. I saw him running, and all of a sudden he disappeared. Yeah, he screwed up his chest there pretty bad, but I do remember that. I couldn't believe he came back and finished the night.
that was
amazing.
Those were some crazy.
But the old Agora was, I just love the old Agora. Those were my kind of concerts. I love club concerts, were so much fun, especially there. was just really cool. That basement dressing room, I'll never forget that place.
You know, and then the thing I liked about that is it was so intimate, and everybody was just jammed up onto the stage, mm-hmm. and everybody was right up there in front. And I'm sure for the band, you know, you were getting it from the audience and just giving it right back, you know, in that up-close, intimate setting, you know?
Exactly. It was just, you could see faces, and, you know, you... before and after, you'd meet half the crowd. It was great.
Yeah, I remember seeing Journey down there when they had first come out, and you know, Neil Sean is playing his guitar and sweating on me from like 2 inches from the tip of my nose, you know. And boy, you know, memories like that, and to see that musicianship and everything up close, those were some fantastic days. That's why I love those kind of shows too, like at the House of Blues. Sometimes you get that feeling, and I just like that intimate settings like that.
You know, I was at that Journey show. I went down there because Ainsley Dunbar was playing drums for him. And I loved Ainsley Dunbar at the time, and went down there to see Ainsley. And it was like I knew people, so I got back. Uh-huh. And it was great to talk to him.
Yeah, you know what really impressed me about that show, too, was the vocals were so clean. You know, when they went into that anytime, ooh, anytime that you want me, and feeling that way. I mean, it was like, it was perfect. It was crystal clear. It was like, it was almost better than the album, you know. And you're sitting there going, wow, these guys can sing, man, to bring that
whole band was great.
You know, it kind of reminds me of you guys too. A Long Time Looking for a Dream, you had that kind of same vocal song in there, same vocal, but that's same kind of style.
Mutt Lange wrote that song. That was Mutt Lange's tune.
Really?
I'm sorry, he didn't write it. Or did he? He brought it in. He brought it to us. He wanted to do it. I can't remember if he wrote it himself or somebody else wrote it, but it was him who brought it to us.
Yeah. That's a great song. Yeah. And getting back to like the Journey there, you know, and then it seemed like the whole thing too, with the Agoras, it seemed like these guys were on the ball, and I, you know, I'm sure it had a lot to do with the support from WMMS and everything, but it was like these bands would play here. It'd be Judas Priest. It would be Journey. Next thing you know, Journey's headlining the World Series of Rock in the stadium. And it's like a year ago, I saw them, you know, right up close in this little room. And I always thought that was pretty cool too.
Yeah, there was like the Cleveland Agora as well. You know, I remember sitting in the front row watching ZZ Top at the Agora. You know, it was, yeah, they had everybody there.
Yeah, you look at some of them books that they've written about WMMS and John Gorman and stuff, and just the bands that people embraced in Cleveland. What do you think it is that made people in Cleveland, you know, embrace all this music and just soak it up like a sponge, where some of these bands weren't getting played or getting any love or attention anywhere, but all of a sudden they would come to Cleveland and the people just wrapped their arms around them?
There was something about Northeast Ohio that used to just, you know, we'd have everybody before they happened. You know, it was like David Bowie made his home here, Springsteen, East Street Band. There were so many of those groups that would play this area, and everyone loved them. And then they happened, and a lot of record companies would use this area to, like, try out bands to see how they went over this area.
Yeah. Boy, that was a magical time, wasn't it? It was just so magical.
It was great, yeah.
It was just...
It was a time of music, too, where people were playing music together, were recording, you know, where you were with the whole band. Things gotten so processed these days. It's hard to go in the studio now, and you're only playing with a small rhythm section, or you're already playing to a finished song. And back in those days, it was a band in the studio, you know. I loved it.
And that makes a big difference, man. You got that feel. You got people interacting, playing off of each other, looking at each other, you know, a head nod or something. And you know, when you hit that cymbal or something, they're going to jump into something. And, you know, you just get that feeling, you know, and that just isn't out there anymore.
It was a good time.
Yeah,
I agree 100%.
Yeah, so I think we covered just about everything. We got the big show coming up. It's this Sunday, the tribute to Michael Stanley. We're going to celebrate 5 decades of music. Actually, that's even kind of an understatement, because what we're celebrating here is 5 decades of a major part of our lives here in Northeast Ohio.
Yeah, it's true, and it's the same feeling for the band. You know, I can't thank Michael enough for what he's given me over the years, and keeping his music alive is just something that I need to do.
Well, as long as I'm on the radio, I'll be helping you to carry on with that too. Don't worry about that, man.
Can't thank you enough.
Yeah, Tommy, thank you for all the great memories, and thanks for taking a little bit of time out here with us to reminisce about the good old days with the Michael Stanley Band, and what a great part of our lives here in Northeast Ohio that you guys were and still are, because, you know, you listen to these songs on the radio, and it's just fantastic. Oh, before we go, is there any one song that you really like to play? Is there one song out there that is like your favorite?
You know, probably it's Rosewood Bitters. I mean, it's been around from the beginning, and there's just lyrically and Michael's voice on that song. It's just, I don't know. It just makes me feel good. I mean, it's not like a incredible complex arrangement or something.
Right.
It's just a great feeling tune for me is Rosewood.
Yeah, too long on the road, my friends. You know, mm-hmm. It comes on. Everybody just sings along to that song, and it just puts you in a good mood. Well, listen, Tommy.
One of the songs I sing along to.
Now, I just want to thank you for taking some time out with us here to chat this afternoon. And we do want to remind everybody one more time, coming up this Sunday, Robin's Theater in downtown Warren. And I do want to remind, if you haven't seen a show at the Robin's Theater, you're going to love this place. I don't know what you're waiting for if you live in the Youngstown area and you haven't been down there, but you're really missing out. The hall itself is awesome. And then tell us about the whole lineup that we got going on Sunday as we pay tribute to Michael Stanley.
Well, it's pretty much the band that played at the MGM up in Cleveland. It's the Resonators, all the guys that's played with Michael for about the last 30 years almost, doing all his last CDs. Jesus, there's so many, I can never name them all.
And the Vindys from Youngstown.
Great band, great band. And I think Jackie, their lead singer, is going to come up and help us sing a song or two. Oh, I'm going to forget people.
Yeah, that's all right. It's going to be a good time. Hey, all you got to know is it's a musical tribute to Michael Stanley by the people that were there that helped him all the way along. And it's going to be a great night of music. And Tommy, we will definitely see you there. And once again, thanks for taking some time out with us and sharing a nice conversation with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Freddie. Thanks very much. Anytime I could help.
Oh, what a great time. So many great memories, man. I mean, all the shows in Cleveland. And like I say, me with the Michael Stanley Band is, you know, when I first started going to Kent, I had been with them every single step of the way. You know, I've seen them in every configuration, any size hall, club, whatever that you can see them at. I've seen it all. And a couple of things that I really didn't get to there with Tommy that I wanted to. Of course, Michael Stanley played at the Hot Day at Idora Park. You can give that a little.
Oh, there you go.
You know, they played at Hot Day at Idora Park. And we talked about Struthers Field House. We talked about when Gary Markowski broke his ribs falling off stage at YSU. I was at all these things, man. Struthers Field House. You know, the thing about Michael Stanley, too, when he come around, it was like the perfect band because the ladies liked Michael Stanley and they rocked enough to make the guys want to go, you know? So, you know, if you had a girlfriend, you could take her to Michael Stanley and, you know, but the band would be rocking enough that you thought, hey, that's cool. You know, right. You get Gary up there and he'd start cranking that guitar and stuff. And I think that's also one of the, you know, big reasons to their success, because the guys like them and the girls like them. Right. And, you know, the girls just loved Michael Stanley when he would come out there and he'd kind of like hold his guitar between his legs and sway his hips and everything. And all the women are like, ooh,
swooning,
you know. And then, you know, yeah, they were swooning. And and then you had you know, like a song like Lover, you know, and, you know, people that were of that age and they're breaking up with their boyfriends and their girlfriends, and that song really hit them, you know. You know, girl, can you just make it anybody else, any, you know, somewhere alone tonight with fine wine and candlelight, you know. You know, do all, yeah, don't they love her, you know. And boy, I tell you, it was some good stuff, you know. And I think, like Tommy said right at the beginning, his songs just reach the people of Northeast Ohio. I think he hit it right. Michael Stanley was like the Bob Seger of Cleveland. you know, and every, you know, it's kind of like the way the connection that Bruce Springsteen has with New Jersey, that Bob Seger has with Detroit. And I think Michael Stanley tapped into that. And it's kind of a shame that they didn't take it to that next level. But a lot of that had to do with record company stuff and politics and, you know, who comes in, who comes out. And we've talked about that a lot on these shows with different guys, like, you know, the Left End story and, you know, and the guys from Mom's Apple Pie and, you know, just, you know, all of a sudden you're rolling along and, oh, and Law, remember when we had Ace Acker here and Ace was talking about how, you know, they got signed with the Who and they were on tour with the Who. And then somewhere a record company guy says, well, you know, you're a little too funky, but you're not to be rock, but you're not funky enough to be funk, and we don't know what to do with you, so we're going on to something else, you know. And that's the way it goes too, you know.
I think music is best when you have that underground that's feeding into that. So I totally wish that these smaller groups would get small venues and trickle up.
Well, we were talking with Kenny Wayne Shepherd about that and Devin Allman. You know, in the past, it's like that whole blues scene that kind of blends into what they call now roots rock or Americana, where it's, is it rock? Is it this? Is it a little country? The blues fits in. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, when you look at the whole scene, the Americana scene, you have, you know, the country influence, you have the rockabilly influence, you have the blues influence. And some people get into that and they are kind of perceived as a blues band because they do some bluesy licks and stuff. But, you know, you got that whole thing out there, that whole, the blues scene. Then you got like Tedeschi Trucks and you got Government Mule and you got bands like that. And, you know, it's all in this, but it's all underground, you know? And that's why I think a lot of people like that. And, you know, when you listen to the guitar riffs, the guitar leads and everything, it's just straight out rock and roll. That if you liked Eric Clapton, if you liked all those kind of bands, the Allman Brothers, you're getting that, but, you know, it doesn't get airplay. It's just out there, but everybody kind of likes it like that. You know, and then what happens is now if somebody sees how it's going, and this always happens in music, if somebody sees how good it's going, then they want to copy it. And so now that you're trying to copy it, you take away from the heart and soul that makes it real. So then you're not getting the real thing. Now it's getting diluted. And now it's just like, we want to sound this way because everybody sounds like that, you know? Right. And that's not the way it goes. And then it starts getting diluted and then everybody gets into it. And then it's kind of like, it takes away your fun.
So now new bands, how they get discovered? Like before it was, you discovered them on radio or they opened for one of another band. Like if you were a new band, how the heck would you get in front of listeners, you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it, in one way it's good because the internet and, you know, YouTube and everything else, that you could get your music out there and you're free to do it and you could build an audience. But say what you want about the record companies. They were in the business to promote bands and make money, and they were very, very, very good at it. They were very good at it. You know, if you got signed and they were really behind you all the way, look out, the sky was the limit. For sure. And they had a way of making stars, you know, and maybe they still doing top 40 to a certain degree and maybe the country in a certain degree, rock, not so much anymore. And then, you know, with the tighter playlist at radio stations and some radio stations going to all automation, a national format, you know, that kind of slammed the door on a lot of bands, you know, in a big way. You know.
And it's fickle though. Like, you know, the Vindies, they proved that they can fill stadiums and have huge audiences.
Yeah.
What about a guy that just does it on YouTube? How sure would you be that they can fill an auditorium?
You're not. It's not like, what's my favorite saying? Nothing's like it used to be. Nothing like it used to be. Oh, let's see. We got a message here from the Hoags. Hoag's in the house. Hoag says he's got laid a time or two to the Michael Stanley band. Absolutely. Yes. You know, that's why people like him. Why doesn't somebody come out and say, I like the Michael Stanley band because he drew a lot of chicks and you could get laid at a Michael Stanley
get
show.
Them all worked up and then they got you.
It's been a long time looking for a dream, you know, ladies' choice. Now look what you've done. I mean, you know, I'll tell you what, speaking of Michael Stanley, a couple weeks ago, I had a chance to jump up on stage with Gary Markowski. You know, every once in a while, he'll let me come up and sing a couple of songs. I'll tell you what, we were at the Ice House for this benefit, and we did Roadhouse Blues, which is one of the few songs that I could actually sing that I don't embarrass myself. And we did Roadhouse Blues, and we did My Town, and it was fantastic. It was just like, you know, and Gary is such a good guitar player. I mean, I personally think that Gary Markowski took the Michael Stanley Band to the next level, a lot like, you know, Joe Walsh took the Eagles to that next level. Yeah. He brought that crazy man attitude, for sure, and he just had that power, and he was there to rock the house. And see, he made the difference from them being, you know, the mellow. He made it so that the dudes could come in and enjoy Michael Stanley because they knew Gary was going to go off on some kind of crazy guitar solo. Yeah. And that's what I think he brought to the band. And, but boy, we did My Town and Roadhouse Blues the other day. And it was just like, I was like, whoa, that was really good. Dang. You know, I actually had
so
a couple.
So what's your go-to karaoke song? Like, if you could do the Fred Perfect karaoke song,
you know
what is it?
I do better with bands than I do with karaoke.
Okay.
But I do, let's see, songs that I could sing decently is.
You got that raspiness.
Yeah, yeah. I got to do stuff like that. I got to do Cadillac Ranch from Bruce Springsteen. I could do Roadhouse Blues, Give Me Three Steps.
Oh yeah, I can see that. Any Buffett stuff?
Yeah. I could do like Why Don't We Get Drunk and Screw, something along that. David Allan Coe, Why Don't You Ever Call Me By My Name? That's another one that I do that I don't look completely stupid, you know, that I could pull off. There's a few like that, you know, kind of more the Roadhouse type songs.
Yeah,
you know,
got that.
And so sure. those Hank Williams Jr., Women I Never Had, and Whiskey Bent and Hellbound, Family Tradition. I could pull those off pretty good.
Johnny Cash.
You know, I'd like to do Johnny Cash, you know, but I would like, you know, at one point I was actually trying to think, boy, if I could learn how to sing a little better, I would like to do a Johnny Cash tribute.
Yes.
Or a Waylon Jennings tribute. Yes. Too. Waylon Jennings is another one of my all time favorites. But anyways, so that's the whole thing with the Michael Stanley Band. And it's going to be a great show. You know, I mean, the Resonators are going to be there, and you know, and just to come out and see the Vindies if you haven't seen them. And I am such a big supporter of Robin's Theater. And I mean, it's not, you know, because we have connections with the radio station or we do advertising. That place is really nice.
Yeah.
It has a great vibe. You go to downtown Warren, you know, and it's free parking. You know, I mean, you got to park on the street or find a lot, but it's hassle free. And, you know, there's a ton of bars and restaurants in downtown Warren now too. So, you know, I mean, and they have a hotel down there too. You know, they have a hotel on the square. I think it's a Best Western or something. That's really nice. And, you know, you could come down there and you could see this show and they can go out for dinner or vice versa. And then, you know, stay over, don't have to worry about it and make a night of it. And, I'm a big fan of that. And the theater, you know, Kenny Hedaris and those people put, you know, a couple million in that place, but you go in there and it is so nice. You know, the lighting, they just did everything.
And their shows are quality.
Yeah.
Man. They're really bringing some awesome acts in there.
You know, look at the last shows that I went down there to see. I went to see Don Felder from the Eagles. And the attendance at that wasn't that good. And you know what? That I think was the first show back after COVID. And there's something about when you book these shows, it seems like when you first book them, there's like this buzz and this thing. And people are really interested in it. But then for some crazy reason, it seems like if you put it off and then you put it off again and it's been like a year, it seems like people, for some reason, even though it's the same guy, same place, it loses some kind of momentum or whatever. Yeah. And I was a little disappointed in the crowd of Don Felder. But here's this guy that wrote all these licks for the Eagles, playing the exact same guitars that are on the record, and he's playing them note for note, and it's his vocals as well. You know, sure, it's Don Henley and Glenn Frey, but he was singing along, and you know, it was really real. You know, it wasn't like, oh, it's an Eagles tribute or something. This was like, okay, that's the dude that played on this. This is the guy to come up with that. That's the guy that wrote that stuff, you know? And so the Don Felder show was really good. And then, let's see, what else, what other show did I go to? Kenny Wayne Shepherd was just fantastic. Those blues shows, like we were talking, that is the perfect place for that. They had Buddy Guy down there last week, and unfortunately I couldn't make it, but Buddy just rocked that house, man. And Donnie Iris did a great job down there. And then another one with that bluesy roots music that we're talking about, Devin Allman, who is Greg Allman's son, and Samantha Fish, who's another like young up and coming blues singer, and she's smoking hot and she's sultry and she could play a mean guitar. Those two put on a killer show. And then Ace Frehley, former guitar player from Kiss. I mean, he knocked it out of the park. And you know what I like? Like we were talking with Tommy earlier, what I like about those shows is you're in a small hall, you're up close, and you can even see the musicians interacting. You know what I mean? And you're right there and you're right on it. And to me, that makes a big difference. Sometimes I think I would rather see a lesser act that's talented in a smaller place. Do I really need to see Kiss when I can see Ace still playing guitar up close?
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
I mean, those are the kind of shows to me now anymore that are more appealing, you know, instead of parking in the big parking lot and hauling in and then
an acre back.
Yeah. From the stage. And then the security on your ass and you got to climb all the way up to the top. Well, maybe you don't. I'm cheap. You know, some people think I get a lot of free tickets. Well, no, I don't.
It's a different experience when you're right there on the band.
Yeah, it definitely is. And just to have the nice setting. And another thing I do want to say about the Robbins Theater is the prices for drinks are reasonable. They are really reasonable. So that's another plus there too. I mean, they're not, you know, raking you over the coals or whatever, you know, and they don't have to pay parking lot attendance and this and that.
$12 beers.
Yeah, no, there's nothing like that, you know, and I think, you know, you get a double a Jack for 10 bucks or whatever,
there you go.
You know? And I mean, how many, well, I would like to throw this question out, but some people I know what they're going to say. My first thing is, how many shots of Jack do you really need? How many doubles of Jack do you really need for the Michael Stanley tribute? And some people maybe five or six.
I'm good with two. I'm done.
You know what? Yeah, you got two doubles for a show that's a couple hours. I mean, that should
last me the whole time.
That should hold you over. Yeah, maybe sure. A beer. Two doubles and a beer. And, you know, okay, so what do you got? 25, 30 bucks invested in alcohol.
It's
and
like
you
buzz,
probably had
good.
And you probably had to have a, you know, couple out in the parking lot, you know. Yeah. That's always my description of Youngstown, Ohio. Okay. Youngstown, Ohio is this. You pull up to a bar, you drink a six pack in the parking lot. Yep. You have a flask hidden in your coat pocket, and then you bitch because you had to pay a $3 cover charge. And whatever happened to 10 cent wings? I remember I used to come to this place, they were 10 cent wings. You know, whatever happened to the all you could eat wing dinner? It's like, yeah, okay, yeah. You know, whatever happened to a lot of stuff, you know? And that, you know, unfortunately for some people in Youngstown, that's the Youngstown mentality, you know?
Yep.
You know, if you don't have a flask on you, I don't know what to tell you. Not that I have one. Wink,
no,
wink.
Nope.
You know, hey, it's just the way it is, you know.
Yep.
Got to have a beer in your sock or something when you go in these places. Yeah. You can't expect me to go in there and pay at a bar, you know. And then you start a fight at the end of the night to top it all off.
And make the news.
And then their best customer gets pissed off and never comes back again. Thanks to these assholes. You know, it's the way it works.
Full circle.
Yeah. You know, it's the way it works. But, oh, you know what? Since we're talking about downtown Warren, I better put the glasses on. It's the lighting in here is a little dim. That's
sorry,
why I'm just having a little problem, you know, so don't think this is because I'm getting old or whatever. No, it's the lighting.
Weird glare.
Yeah. And so I put these on But anyways, this weekend, they kick off the season at River Rock at the Amp in downtown Warren. And this is another fun thing, man. I'll tell you, it's been going now for a lot of years. And, you know, once again, reasonable tickets, reasonable price. Although some people would like it to be free. You know, for some people, that $10, that $10 ticket there just ain't cutting it. Why can't it be free?
Who runs the amphitheater in Warren? Is it
the same? Kenny Hedaris? Okay. Yeah. Sunrise Entertainment.
Beautiful.
And you know, he owns the Sunrise in downtown Warren. Great pizza and stuff. And this weekend they kick it off on the 28th. That's what, Saturday night, 28th. Could you believe it? We're halfway done with this year.
Yeah, right.
Holy, I can't even wrap my head around that. But coming up Saturday night, they got Straight On, a great tribute to Heart. And I know these ladies, and I've seen them a lot of times, and they do a good show. And the opening is going to be Jersey, a Bruce Springsteen tribute. So if you're a Bruce fan, which, by the way, Bruce announced some concert dates coming up. A lot of people in Bruce Nation have been waiting for this. So I think he's going to kick his tour off in February. And then go to Europe for a while. Then next year, August or so, he'll be back for some stadium tours in the U.S. So Bruce fans, get ready for that. But so that's coming up Saturday, $8 for that. And then the 11th, they have a Toby Keith, Jason Aldean thing. Saturday, June 18th, they have my buddies from the Huck and Philbillies and an AC/DC tribute that's going to be really good. And then Saturday the 25th, Journey and Styx tribute. And here's one you want to mark your calendar for. And I definitely hope I could make this. Friday, July 1st, Fins to the Left with their tribute to Jimmy Buffett. And Sean Lawless does an excellent job. And Sean has been doing Fins to the Left for so many years. And they got the Buffett thing down. And on top of this, you're going to get members from Jimmy's band come up and play with him.
No,
he's
kidding.
Got connections. So Nadira Shakur and what's the other singer's name? I can't think of it right now. The blonde and his steel drum player and Michael Utley, his keyboard player. They're all going to be there as part of the show. So that just adds to it. And I'll tell you what, 4th of July weekend, Friday, July 1st, you want to check that one out. And then the next day, July 2nd, they're going to do a double header that weekend. July 2nd, they got Seven Bridges, which is like the ultimate Eagles tribute band. And, you know, let's face it. If you do want to bitch about ticket prices and stuff, you know, $70, $80 to see the Eagles from the last row at the queue. Although I sit there and I'm just happy to be in the thing, but, or $10 to see a good band playing those kind of songs. You know, some people have like a snobby attitude about tribute bands. Hey, you're a tribute band. Why don't you write your own stuff? And, you know, but here's the thing with that. A lot of these guys that are in these tribute bands are in other bands and have other projects going, and these tribute bands keep them going. And besides that, what does it mean? If you can't afford to see the Eagles, or if the Eagles aren't around, the only time you can see Eagles music played live is by the Eagles. If you could make it that day, or other than that, you're shit out of luck. I just don't get that mentality. You know, I mean, I get the tribute bands, and if you're a Bruce Springsteen fan, I mean, okay, you haven't seen Bruce for 3 years. You want to hear some of his songs played live or whoever, you know, why not go down there? Then coming up on July 9th, Draw the Line, Aerosmith tribute. They got a Bon Jovi tribute coming up. Ultimate tribute to Tom Petty. They got Queen Nation. This one should be fun. A tribute to Earth, Wind and Fire.
Oh, yeah.
I love Earth, Wind, and Fire. Oh, yeah. See, I like all that 70s R&B. I grew up on that stuff. Earth, Wind, and Fire and Tower of Power and the Isley Brothers and Sly and the Family Stone. Boy, I tell you, you know, that was back in the day when, like, music was really, you know, you it was gelled, you know.
Feel-good stuff.
Yeah. And you could be a rocker, but you could still go see those bands. And there was enough rock in there and there was enough funk. It was funky enough
right. To
hold your attention, you know. And, yeah, that's going to be a good one. And then they got Wish You Were Here, tribute to Pink Floyd. And those guys are really good. And then they got the Zeppelin tribute, and then everybody's favorite Disco Inferno wraps up the summer. But once again, when you go to downtown Warren and see these shows, it's awesome. And it's a great night out. You're outside. The only thing you got to knock on wood is that we have a nice summer. Are we going to be able to hold on and have some nice weather and have some nice Saturday nights where you could be out under the stars, have a couple of beers and just listen to some great music.
This is our summer.
That's what I'm hoping for. I want to say that I really do, because I'm just feeling it. I'm just feeling it. And, you know, I got my fingers crossed, and I would just like, you know, we do deserve a really great summer. And I think with everything going on in the world today, with the war and gas prices and shootings and this and that, I really think we need that escape. Heck, you know what? I think nice weather on a Saturday night to go out and listen to some music, or just sit on your patio and sit around the fire with your family, or go to the campgrounds or whatever, just to get away from it, you know,
We're going to be high 80s next week. I don't have to go down to Florida to see Haley.
Yeah. Right?
I could stay in Ohio for high 80s.
I know.
Beautiful.
I know. But I got to get down there. You know, but I haven't been there since December. You know, usually I go like four or five times a year, and I've been lacking. Where'd I go? I went to Chicago twice. Now I'm reading in the paper, Chicago, they're shooting them up there like crazy.
Would go nowhere near that place. Right,
you know, now. What? After these last two times I was there, you know, I was thinking about doing like some trips and taking some people along. Now I'm thinking that might not be a good idea. Yeah. Although, you know what? You can travel safely, though. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things you have to do to be on the lookout. You know, first of all, you got to be vigilant. And I think in this day and age, I would just stay off the subway completely.
Yeah, for
sure. I would just stay off the subways in these big cities. But you know what they're doing now? They're jacking up the Uber so high because they know people don't want to go on that.
Yeah.
So now they got the Uber prices so high. You know, the last time I was there, it was kind of like, yeah, you know what? Maybe it's better off taking the Uber, you know, because these subways, it New York City too, another one of my favorite places. I mean, this past week, they, you know, some crazy homeless guy just got on a train and walked up to some guy he never saw before and shot him in the chest. You know, how do you stop that?
Right.
But then on the other hand, it was like, okay, the last time I was there, you know, it was a beautiful Sunday afternoon. People were taking the tour on the boat, on the river, and people are going out, going about their life and going to the Navy Pier and stuff. So what are you supposed to do? Are you just supposed to shut it down? Or, you know, I really think, and this has really even nothing to do with gun control or whatever, because I definitely don't want to get into that. And I hate to even go down this road. I don't know why I'm going down this road, because in Fast Freddy Land, none of this stuff exists. But because I go to these places and I enjoy going to these places, they got to do something, because you're just going to kill the tourist business. You're going to kill the tourism. Right. And do you know, in these big cities, how many people does that support? You know, these hotels, the hotel support staff and bars and everything else. And I think we got to get to the point where we got to stop these idiots from ruining it for millions of people.
Yep.
You know, and taking money out of their pocket, you know, a lot of people would always look forward to maybe their trip to Chicago in the summertime or their trip to New York. I mean, the last time I was in New York, it wasn't quite a ghost town, but it definitely wasn't like it used to be.
Right. Well, by this time of the year, I would have made four trips to Florida by now. And I made zero at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think Florida, fortunately, you go to Clearwater Beach and you go to the beaches and stuff. I think you're pretty cool. But I mean, it's
$5 a gallon, $4.50.
Oh, well, yeah, you got the big motorhome there. Yeah. Gus, the bus ain't, you know, that ain't free.
Five and a half miles a gallon. Yeah, that's a lot of gallons. $5.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see why that's sitting for right now, yeah, man. But yeah, I think though, you know, and not to get into the talk show or whatever, but it's just been, because it's been bothering me so much. I mean, it's just a problem in every city now. I mean, you just can't point a finger to Chicago. You can't point a city. You know, you got to look at Youngstown. You got to look at everywhere,
right.
Milwaukee, anywhere, any city. It just seems like there's all this shooting going on, and, you know, something's got to give, and, you know, you just can't continue on like this. And the solution isn't everybody carry a gun and then we'll just have a shootout, you know, and I think you got to look at that and you got to say, we got some kind of deeper problem.
For sure.
There's something at the heart of this problem beyond guns that we gotta stop.
Right. Can I curveball you?
Yeah.
Cleveland Browns. Like, Mr. Mayfield. Like, I'm watching this play out, and this is like a soap opera drama. Like, we start on week one with a suspended quarterback, and like, are we starting Baker? And Baker hates us. This is gonna be great.
And now, you know, you got to wonder, because everybody's saying, oh, these people, and now it's like, well, did you hear the testimony today? And well, he kind of admitted that, you know, yeah, well, maybe this happened. You know, I don't know. You know what? Here's the whole thing. Is Deshaun Watson maybe a better quarterback than Baker? Maybe so. But it's the principle. It's the principle. You built us up on this. You got us all fired up. You got us all psyched up. This is the guy. This is our guy, Baker Mayfield. Takes us to the playoffs. We beat the Steelers, you know, twice in 2 weeks. And we, you know, we finally get the ball going. Then all of a sudden, you just kick the guy to the curb. Wow. Now, see, I know it's a business and everything. And maybe if they did it for Aaron Rodgers, you would do something. But with this guy with this sketchy past and stuff, you know, but I'm sure if he wins a Super Bowl, everybody's going to love him, because right. That's the way it goes.
But you didn't pay a sketchy past rate, right? You paid like top of the top.
Yeah. Know, right? You know what? And that's another thing that I think that when it comes down to if he's going to get a suspension or something, the NFL and all of pro sports is really, really pissed at the Browns for starting this guaranteed contract shit. I mean, there's a lot of people out there going, are you crazy? You know, now, okay, if this guy gets it, who isn't even like, you know, supposedly he is going to be a superstar and all this. But now, okay, what would Big Ben be doing? What would Aaron Rodgers want? What would all these other guys want? You know, and they opened this Pandora's box that now all these people are going to want these guaranteed contracts. Right. Hey, they could come in there and get hurt in practice, and then you're out $200 million for the next how many years? Crazy. It was just a stupid contract. And, you know, and I know baseball is the same way feeling about that. You know, what are you doing? What are you thinking here? You know, I mean, it is a business. And you're just going to give these guys a guaranteed contract. So now everybody out there that scores a bunch of touchdowns or wins a playoff game, you know, I want a guaranteed contract too, or I'm not playing, you know.
Everybody's going to request it from this point. And I think it started with, like, Joe Flacco was the first one that I thought, like, they're paying him ridiculous money. And he won a Super Bowl and it was okay. Yeah. But then it got ridiculous that every quarterback's going to demand $40 million a year to, you know, play on the field.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, I think they really screwed up that angle, 100%. From that angle there, because they just wanted him so bad and they didn't care who it was. And they're just like, yeah.
So do you think Baker was as like radioactive as he's being played out to be?
No, I think OBJ was a cancer in the locker room and turned everybody against him, is what I think. Him and his dad. And I think he was just in there chirping. And OBJ isn't all that, you know, we all know that. And I think, you know, with him chirping and turning people against Baker, you know, when we were winning, you know, when we almost knocked off Kansas City in the playoffs, nobody had a problem. Nobody had a problem with that. Oh, it's Baker, man. You know, we knocked off the Steelers twice. Nobody had a problem. First playoff win in Cleveland for how many years? And Baker was the man. I think the problem with this whole thing was they should have set him out until he got better. They should have set him out. And I think Baker was such a competitor that he wanted to go out there. I think Baker wanted to be on the field no matter what. And I think he wanted to show his teammates that, look, man, I'm out here, I'm gutting it out, and I'm out here to play. And I hope everybody else is out here to gut it out and give it all they got. And I think that's what happened. And I think they should have just sat him for a while, wait until he got better, and then took it from there, you know. But that's just me. I don't know.
Where quarterbacks go to die.
Yep. Another name on the shirt, you know, and then you get everybody all fired up though. And then all the fans go out and they buy these shirts and they buy these jerseys and they want to be with the guy. Now you're sitting there with just another stupid ass shirt on your pile of other loser shirts that you have that aren't even around there. Yeah. I got my Peyton Hillis and I got my William Green. I got my Jeff Garcia and I got my Tim Couch and, you know, whoever else. If you got a Joe Thomas jersey, you were good to go. You know, and Phil Dawson. I got Phil Dawson and Joe Thomas, but no, we didn't buy those because they were there. And instead, you know, you go out and buy, you know, whoever the next guy is. And
1 year.
Yeah. Peyton Hillis was the one though. Remember that? Yes, he come out of nowhere. And then he was hurt.
Like, on the cover of Madden.
Yeah. He was on the cover of Madden and nobody ever heard of this guy. And then everybody, you know, they probably wanted to give him, nowadays they'd probably have to give him a guaranteed contract. And, you know, and I think what's happening in pro sports right now too is I think the players call too much of the shots, and they, you know, I really think they have more power to get coaches fired and players fired. Sure. And, you know, I don't think that's right, you know, because I can't do it at my work. You know, who could really do that at your work? Yeah, you start bitching. You know what happens when you pitch there? See ya. You right. know, this guy's a cancer. This guy's a troublemaker. But in like the NFL and in pro sports, you know,
tolerated totally. Yeah.
You win games. You saw it in the NFL was big, and you know, NBA it was big. You know, and you know when those guys were making their super teams and all that stuff. And you know,
I really do feel bad for Baker. I mean, you basically judge him on an injury year. I mean,
yeah.
Is that
it is? You know, and I think everybody knows it. You know, and but a lot of people say, we're going to win. But then I sometimes say, but it's the Browns. I'm not building my hopes up, you know. And really, seriously, that's right. My whole thing. I don't get up there and start doing backflips anymore. You know what? And I bought in on Baker. I bought in on Baker for this season. After last year and the season we had and, you know, with the COVID and stuff. And then we come out and, man, you know, after last year, you know, we took the Chiefs right down to the wire in the playoffs. I mean,
so we could play?
You know what? You know, it's like, hey, people, don't you remember we were knocking on the door for the Super Bowl? We took the champs right to the wire.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden now the guy's a dick. Now he's just a complete asshole. Oh, we have nothing left. You know, get rid of this guy.
Did him dirty.
Yeah, totally it is. It's just, and you know, and I know, of course, you know, they're going to say, yeah, Baker's our man. So why do you even lie like that though? Just a flat out lie to the fans and everything else. Yep. Why didn't you just say, listen, we're going to be honest with you. We have some concerns about Baker. And unfortunately, if we see something that we could upgrade or bring somebody in the camp to compete for the job, then, you know.
But you know, then you see loyalty, like Clowney signs for $11 million where he had a $14 million offer elsewhere.
Yeah.
So like, you'd love to see a team that stick it out, but when the Browns do you dirty like that, how many loyal players want to stick on the team?
Yeah. That was just a whole crazy thing. I don't know. It just left a bad taste in my mouth.
I'm with
you know, when you see how they, you know, the process that it went through and, you
he's
know,
he's our guy.
Yeah. Super Bowl. Everybody, how many teams had the Browns predicted for the Super Bowl this year? Everybody and their brother, the Browns were one of the favorite teams for the Super Bowl. And then, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't sit right with me. You know, I'll still be a fan, you know, that's the thing, but it still leaves kind of a dirty taste in your mouth, you know, because you've always bitched about Roethlisberger, you know, even, you know, Kareem Hunt, when he knocked that girl out and, you know, when Ray Lewis was involved with all his shenanigans and, you know, you really were, you know, like, oh, that's low down. That's, you know, boo, he's, you know, Roethlisberger. And now we get a guy, but now everybody's like, yeah, we're going to the Super Bowl, right. Baby. We got our guy, you know. But before, for other people, it was like, I don't know. But, yeah, that's the way it goes.
Well, when I bet the Browns this year, I took the points, and I out of 11 games that I bet, about $100 per game, I won 8 out of 11 on the year. So they did great by my standards.
Yeah,
that was an amazing win.
You know, I mean, it was a fun season, and I just think they should have sat Baker until he got better,
100%.
And then just come totally out this year and been ready to go, and he could have been 100% and just take it from there. So, yeah, you know, that just puts a bad taste in your mouth about pro sports. But like I say, I'm not going to sit there. Oh, never watch the Browns again. And
but now, what do you think about Pittsburgh fans? Because they can't really be cocky anymore.
Like, yeah,
really
no.
They're starting from scratch.
Yeah. This could be, you know, hopefully things pan out for the Browns that maybe for the next few years that we could get get some bragging rights.
Roethlisberger had like rapist things, and then his new quarterback has tiny hands, so we'll always have something to pick on him for.
yeah, you know. So who knows? But it kind of takes the fun out of it, you know. Why can't you just watch the game? And why do we need all the drama, all the soap opera, you know, stuff? And
rivalry, one thing, but it got like downright hard to even.
Well, yeah, because here's the definition of a rivalry. You win one, I win yes. one. I'm going to beat you the next time because I'm pissed at you. And then you're going to knock me out of the playoffs this year. And then next year I'm going to come back and knock you out of the playoffs. And as soon as we get on the field, we want to fist fight each other. But, you know, the rivalry with the Browns and Steelers mainly is more fan-based than it is player-based, you know.
We just hate each other.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. It's a fan rivalry, but you don't see it like, you know, especially like say the Ravens and the Steelers is more of a rivalry. Right. I think player wise
50-50.
Yeah. And you know, I hate Hines Ward and Hines Ward hates this guy. And you know, and they really have this bad blood between them. Now to me, that's a rivalry. Same with Ohio State. It hasn't really been a rivalry.
Right.
You know, they won this year, but when you go and you beat somebody 15 games in a row,
not a
when Ben Roethlisberger is the winningest quarterback in your stadium, you know, it's like, how is that a rivalry?
Right.
You can sit there and talk smack all you want, you know, but it's more like I'm insulting you for being a Steelers fan, because really, how do you defend that? You know, you just have to, you know, make fun of Roethlisberger, and you have to call him names, and you got to call it Schittsburg and Pittspuke and, you know, things along that line.
Right.
And then the next Sunday they come by and they whip your ass, and then you sit there and then it's like, and then they're back on you. And then the only thing you could do is call names, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, the real VIP is Fred Woke, who's been a Cleveland fan
from
no matter what from the very beginning.
And I got the tattoo on my ass to prove it of the 19 or 2004 Brown Steelers game.
There you go.
I have stood on the corner champion. In a dress with a penis on my head with a sign around my neck that said I'm a Browns fan. I have drank from a slop bucket.
Loyalty.
You know, and that's why I see some of these people now, you know, they'll get on Facebook or social media and they'll like call people out like, yeah, you ain't a real Browns fan if you're not with Deshaun, you know, yeah, you ain't old man. Yeah. Try me, you bitch. Know, yeah. You know, like, it's like, look, if you've been a Browns fan, as long as a lot of us old farts have been, you can't just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, exactly.
When you went through all the stuff that we went through and the team moving away on top of it and the fumble, the drive and Red Right 88 and everything else, every heartbreak in Cleveland sports in the 1995 World Series, 1997 World Series, the World Series against the Cubs, you know, do you want to continue on?
Nope,
do you want to continue on? And then you're going to judge somebody like, you're not a real fan. The fact that I even have the slightest bit of interest in these teams, it should say something. Talk to me in 20 years, yeah. You know.
1-15. I'm there.
Yeah, I was. I was there for the one victory. I was there for the one victory when we beat the Chargers.
Yes.
Christmas Eve. I was there in kind of like a rainy drizzle afternoon on Christmas Eve. And I won the tickets in a raffle.
Nice.
You know what? I buy every gun raffle ticket. I buy every whiskey basket raffle ticket. I buy every 50-50 ticket. The only thing I ever won was tickets to the Browns Chargers when the Browns were 0-14 on Christmas Eve.
Sometimes a punishment. Yours was a gift, a reward. Yeah.
You know what? But I was there and I went to the game. I went to the game. A lot of people didn't. You know, I was there that one day, you know, we played the Ravens in this terrible downpour. It was just terrible. And the Ravens were just kicking our ass. And then you had some of these young guys, yeah, you're not a real fan. Why are you booing the team or whatever? And I think like whoever our kicker was at the time missed like 5 field goals or something. It was something stupid. And it was a terrible day. And just the fact that you were there on that day, you know, and then somebody's going to tell you, you're not a fan. Like, shut up. Who are you to judge who's a fan?
I took my wife to her first football game. It was Houston Oilers at Municipal Stadium with downpour rain that changed the snow halfway through the game.
Oh, yeah.
We won by field goals because that's all we could do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, oh, yeah. You're not a real fan. Yeah. If you're not with what's going on here, yeah, you're not a fan. If you're not for these moves and stuff, it's like, how many bad moves do you have to see?
Right.
How many bad moves do you have to see year after year after year after year after year? My dad died, 14 years ago at the age of 70. And, you know, he hadn't seen one since 64. He never saw a Super Bowl, you know.
In my lifetime, right?
You know, and that's what it's like. So why, you know, some of these people, yeah, you're not a fan. When I hear people say that kind of stupid stuff, it's just like, come on, man.
Yep.
Yeah, we're fans. The fact that we're still interested after all this, especially people in Youngstown, if you haven't jumped on the Steelers bandwagon, which you could have very easily done. It's a lot easier to root for a Super Bowl winning team. Let me tell you, you know, if we weren't real fans, we'd all be wearing black and gold, and jumping on the bandwagon, calling you names and anyone for the thumb. Here's a, you know, if it's brown, flush it down, you know,
we're loyal,
you know? So to even get into that whole thing to me, it's just like stupid.
Well, that's why you're the VIP. Cause you've been true to your team, no matter what.
Through thick or thin.
Thick or thin.
Peckers out or peckers in. You know? Well, what do you think? It's 9 o'clock. Let's wrap it up, man. Well, let me take one last sip out of this. Once again, I just want to remind everybody, you know, some of the cool stuff we got going on. Big Block Party Weekend at Y103. Your chance to win tickets to Sammy Hagar and George Thorogood at Blossom to kick off the summer. We have a little Billy Idol special. We'll be running here and there throughout the weekend. And then, let's see, Sunday, you got the Michael Stanley tribute at the Robbins Theater in downtown Warren. Saturday, you got the Hart tribute and the Bruce Springsteen tribute at the Amphitheater in downtown Warren. And then next week, our guest will be Cindy Farina, great singer. I'll tell you what, Cindy has one of the best voices of anybody out there. She can belt out songs like no other. And Cindy's been around for many, many years, you know, with Bootleg and a lot of different bands. And her brother, Carl, who's another cat that's been playing in local bands for I don't know how long. And he's battling cancer. They're going to have a big benefit for him coming up the 5th of June at West Side Lane. So come on out and show some love for him. And we'll be chatting with Cindy next week. And, oh, I know what else we might be doing next week, if it all pans out. You know, the United Way Bass Classic is coming up next Saturday, a week from Saturday. And, you know, I'm in it. And my son is teaming up with, you know, his guy. And then Rick Henniger from Fish and Field Report is teaming up. And I think we're going to have to maybe get the whole crew down here and, you know, have to come up with some kind of bet or something for this, you know.
And I got to cover this. I got to bring a camera out there and see you guys on.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Yeah. You should come out there next year. You got to fish. You got to fish in that. That, you know, it's such a great tournament and such a great fundraiser. And I'm just glad to be a part of it. But, yeah, I talked with Jack Waltz today. You know, I was trying to get that interview ready, but I just ran out of time.
Now, do you and your son get competitive when it comes to those tournaments?
Yeah, but unfortunately, you know, he's a little bit better than me. You know, I got
some experience.
Yeah, you know, it's not like one of those things like, yeah, I'm going to get out there and get you, you know, because most of the time, you know, when we go out, he puts me on the big fish, you know, so I could sit there and rib them and stuff, but you know, if I win, then I'll put the hammer down. But if I don't win, I'm not going to go out there because
once again,
it makes you look stupid to me anyways. You know, you sit there and you talk all this smack. I mean, it's fun. Yeah. Oh, we're going to get you this time. But you're sitting there thinking, okay, you got him that wins a lot of these tournaments around here. And then he's fishing with a guy from the Pro Bass Tournament, you know, although they didn't win last year. Now, see, they're not even looking at me. Although I am a 2-time champion.
Are you really?
Yes, I am.
Beautiful.
I am a 2-time champion. I just got hooked up with the right guys, you know, right team. But I'm a 2-time champion. And they thought they had it in the bag last year. And I think they missed a fish or two right at the end, you know, a couple of them fell off, and they're really taking this serious. Mm-hmm. They're planning on coming out and fishing hard. Oh yeah. Yeah. These guys, especially like if you're on the pro bass tour and you lost at like a local tournament, you know, because that's really big bragging rights for the guys that win. Because they'll sit there and say, yeah, you know, who was in there? Dustin DeMarion. He's on the pro tour, you know, we skunked them, you know, mm-hmm. You know,
bragging rights.
And you know, and that's why I give guys like that credit too, that come out to that, because there is a lot of pressure on them, you know, because everybody's looking at them, and everybody, they might not be saying it, but they want to beat them. They want to make sure that, this, you know, and we got some good fishermen around here like that. Nick Provonischak, he's been on the pro tour, and he's a hammer. And boy, you got some of these guys out there that are just really, really good. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait, you know, but like I say, I might sneak in there, you know, don't count me out.
Slide, you know, in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I could do it if, you know, I could get in there.
We'll
I
bring
can
mix him in. It we'll up. Talk to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think it'll be fun if we can get them all together. So maybe we'll do Cindy first half of the show and these guys the second half.
That'd be great.
And it'll be a good time. All right, Joe. Well, thank you. Thanks for the Buffalo Trace. Thanks everybody good for time. Tuning in. And I'll catch you tomorrow afternoon at 3 Y103. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.